I had the privilege of learning the blues from some legendary musicians. I was one of the few white musicians playing blues back in the 60s, and I want to share some of those stories with you. The 60s and 70s were divisive times, but the blues connected us and always brought us together. I'm Billy Pruitt. Let's talk a blues streak.
Freedom, 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 freedom.
I remember hearing Richie Havens at Woodstock, and it changed my life. My freedom was pursuing my music. That meant leaving my comfort zone in Florida to move to Chicago. I chose Chicago because all my favorite blues records were recorded there. Even back then, Chicago was the blues capital of the world. Making the decision to change towns was hard for me. I have to go and try my luck in Chicago, and I soon found myself up there. But I had two choices, either get some kind of day job for cash and give up my musical dreams of playing solo, or find a place to stay that I had total control over. How was I going to do this? As always, I kept listening to my friend, the radio, where the magic is invisible and it just flies through the air. The only thing that I owned free and clear except my guitar was my old 57 Beetle. It had 200,000 miles on it and it was burning oil like a crop duster. I knew I had to get more reliable transportation, and I couldn't put it off too much longer, especially if I was going to start playing solo gigs, because they were usually out there in the suburbs or even small towns out of Chicago. On the radio, I heard Going Mobile. A guy who lived in a motor home and lived on the road. Wow. I couldn't afford a motor home by any stretch, but why couldn't I live in a truck? I went out shopping and I found an old abandoned telephone truck, the short wheelbase 1966 Dodge minivan. Had rust everywhere, two bucket seats in front with a Mopar straight six in between the seats. Three speed on the column, no windows in the back, ladder racks on both sides. I bought it cheap and worked on it every day. I'm gonna live in this truck. I can write songs in here. Every day, I started insulating it, putting up paneling over the insulation, building a nice bed with storage underneath, a tiny, teeny closet, a little teeny workstation that I could sit down. Portable Coleman camping sink, a block of ice that you put on top that lasts for 3 days if you keep the door closed enough, and a propane heater in the wintertime. Even Kmart mirrors over one wall. A teeny tiny black and white TV for my bed. I went to a foam rubber company and I had them cut a big, thick, 12-inch piece of foam that I designated for my bed area. Blackout curtains behind the front seats. And since there were no windows, I bought a plexiglass dome that looked like a tank turret or something from Cadillac Plastics, and I installed it on top so I could see out when I would sit up in my bed. The van was finally finished, and it would later remind me of Magic Slim's song about living on the road.
Well, rocks is my pillow, cold ground is my bed, highway is my home, and I'm mighty well.
I was really excited to start my new adventure. Of course, I didn't have insurance or money in the bank or anything. I was flying by the seat of my pants, but I wanted it to look nice. Cover all that rust with Bondo, and I took it to Earl Scheib. Earl Scheib, any car, any color, $29.95, I said. Black on black in black. They said it'll be ready at 5 p.m. An 8-hour paint job. And they didn't take a lot of time masking off all the details. It came out of there that day. Man, a black, some kind of military looking thing with a dome on top. Very suspicious, but man, this is so cool. What an adventure I was anticipating. I took what clothes would fit and I put them in the little closet. And I took the rest of them to a thrift store and got cash. Now I got cash for gas. I could buy auto insurance, but nah. In those days, you didn't need auto insurance to drive. Could get health insurance. No, come on. I'm invincible. I filled up the tank with gas, and I did it. I finally found a way to live free. I was so happy. I was ecstatic. I was getting goosebumps. It was time to finally go solo. I did this on my own. An acoustic guitar, a notepad to write songs, a few 8x10 press pictures, and I started booking solo gigs, and I wasn't really sure how it was going to go. It was usually restaurants or coffee houses, averaging about $25 a night. There was always the Earl of Old Town right across from Second City, Sunshine Coffee House, a little place in a church that paid $15 a night, but hey, it was cash. The Back Room on Rush. But I was living free. Hey, I'm beating the system. I'm getting paid to learn. I lived in my truck for 3 years without missing a beat. 3 summers and 2 winters. I was on top of the world, playing at night, sleeping till noon. Anywhere I shut my engine off, I was home. I started getting pretty prolific writing songs because there wasn't anything to do but write. I was always looking for work. It was working. I was playing solo gigs and getting cash. The one prestige place for traditional folk music was called the Barbarossa, 1117 North Dearborn, a traditional folk place with the real purists, sort of like the Earl of Old Town. The owner wouldn't hire me because I looked like some kind of heavy metal guy. So I started doing open mics on Monday night to impress him. I suppose he thought I looked like a heavy metal guy and I didn't really play folk music, which was pretty much true, because I would always bend strings and turn everything into some kind of blues song. I had a 6-string ovation, and I would pretend I was going to play some polite Gordon Lightfoot or John Denver song, you know, Sunshine on My Shoulder or something, and then I'd morph into some kind of random Robert Johnson or Otis Rush song from the past. What I did best was play lead guitar, but as an acoustic solo artist, I couldn't even showcase my lead playing or harp. Harp is jargon for harmonica. I longed to play lead like I used to, with Otis Rush when he gave me solos. To solve that problem, I decided to be unique and record some kind of backing track to play on a big boombox like the kind you'd put on your shoulders. And then I could put it behind me and put a mic on it. Then it would go through the PA. So one night I had a gig at the Barbarossa. He finally hired me, a traditional folk club that liked pure, clean, unadulterated music. Regulars there were Skip Haynes, later to form Alioto Haynes and Jeremiah, that I became a part of, called Acme Thunder Band, and Steve Goodman, who penned City of New Orleans. He asked me to play on his demo tape, and I had the honor of playing harp on that tape, which he later pitched to Arlo Guthrie, and it became a big hit. So after pestering the owner of the Barbarossa, the Folk and Blues Circle, day and night, I was booked there, and the place was packed. I thought I would spring my boombox show on a traditional folk audience. So at the end of the night, I turned up my boombox, and that had the rhythm section that I played all the instruments on, and I pulled out my little pig-nose battery amp and my Stratocaster. I plugged it in, and I played the latest song I just wrote, the Maximum Buzz Boogie. Already, I could see the crowd fading slowly. Then I laid down a killer solo, totally distorted and feeding back with my little pig-nose. It felt great, but I just got a polite smattering of applause. When I was packing up, not much to do with an acoustic show, just put the guitar in the case and make one trip out to the truck. The owner came over to me and said, "Did you hear what was coming out of that amp?" I said, "Yeah, pretty cool, right? It was all ripping and distorted." "Did you hear how distorted it was?" "Yeah, it was awful." "Really?" I thought he liked it. I thought he was giving me a compliment. I thought I was blazing the trail with something unique, but it was going to be an uphill battle. Scratch off Barbarossa. Well, nothing left to do but head into the busy Northside congested parking area and find a legal parking spot in the neighborhood to spend the night and contemplate the universe on my own. I owned it all, but I had nothing. Mornings I would try to find more bookings, so I would take a pocket full of quarters and drop them into the payphone, since of course there were no cell phones or email. Around that time I was following Chicago's Bobby Rush, born Emmett Ellis Jr., and Curtis Mayfield, who sometimes did a solo act. If I was playing a club or a restaurant, I would always camp out in the parking lot, not having to worry too much about police hassles because I was parked on private property. They can't mess with me. A Greek gentleman named George managed all the local Village Squire restaurant chains at the time. And he loved me. They paid $40 a night, and I had gainful employment anytime I wanted with him. And he kept my little press picture permanently up in the windows. One of my press pictures was me standing by a Learjet. My buddy and I took a bunch of pictures at the Executive Airport in Wheeling, Illinois. There was no airport security at that time, not even a fence. So I put on my suit and slicked up my hair, and we just walked onto the tarmac where all the private jets were parked, and I made myself at home leading all over this one little plane in a slick outfit. That's one of my press pictures that I still have. Little did the clientele know that the guy leaning all over that plane in the slick outfit was living in a truck right outside in the parking lot. When I was working the Elgin Village Squire on Randall Road late one night after the last set when the club was empty, I decided to pull out a few of my original songs. I was on stage. It was me and the bartender. He was the best audience I ever had. So I started playing a few of my songs, and George in the office heard it, and he came out of the office, and he just leaned on the back wall and started watching me. And then he pulled out a champagne bucket with ice and opened a bottle of champagne and put it next to me on the stage. I spent the rest of the set drinking champagne. He says, "That's pretty good stuff." So I felt good. Club was closed. He locked up. It's in the middle of January, about 10 below zero. When I went home to my truck in the parking lot, I was the only vehicle left parked. The propane heater used to keep the truck about 90 degrees all the time, and I would lay on top of my bed in my underwear with lots of throw pillows, like I was king of the road. I had it made, man. So I turned off my built-in camping lights on top of my bed, turned off the TV, closed my eyes, laid my head down, knock on the door right by my head, back door. I was always worried about getting robbed. I couldn't sound too weak.
"Who is it?"
"Elgin Police Department."
"Oh, okay, hold on."
So I turned on my 12-volt camping light and opened the back door of my van, and I was in my underwear, and these two young rookie cops were standing there, and they looked really surprised at the wall of mirrors. And they saw my TV, and it was warm, warm inside the truck. Gold carpet was stapled all over the paneling, and I was laying in the nest I made in a pile of throw pillows like the king. And they just went, "Wow, do you live in here?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." Lots of questions. "That's pretty cool." I said, "Yeah, I play here, and I'm just doing a little urban camping. Is that okay?" It was 2 a.m., and they were really bored, and they thought, you know, something just doesn't look right here. So they said, "You got ID?" I said, sure, guys, here you go. "What are you doing here?" I explained. I said, "That's my name on the marquee, and that's my picture in the window, appearing now." They shined their 5-cell flashlight over to the window, and there was a picture of a guy leaning on a Learjet. Seemed pretty suspicious. "Well, your ID says Horace Pruitt and the marquee says Billy Pruitt. What is that? Huh? Is that a relative or something?" I explained. They seemed to understand as they handed me back my driver's license and said, "Well, listen, you can't stay here. George takes care of us, and we have to keep an eye on the place, and you can't just park here all night." I knew it was private property, and they were wrong, but hey, it's a police state. I'm not going to argue. I said, "Okay, I'll leave." Now I'm wide awake with adrenaline. Oh, man, I feel a song coming on now after being questioned. So I got dressed, crawled out the back door, went in the driver's side in the parking lot, and started the truck. Vroom! Where will I go? Now you got nowhere to go. They won't let you stay in the private parking lot. They won't let you stay on private property. Go find a place to live. Okay. I thought I'd find a nice, quiet place to camp out. So I drove down Randall Road out in the middle of Elgin and randomly turned off the beaten path down some dirt road. There wasn't much snow. It was way below zero. It was frozen like a tundra. So I took that road till it ran out, and then it went into some farmer's tractor path or something in the middle of a field, desolate and abandoned. I thought, well, nobody will find me here, so I crawled through the curtain back on top of my bed, and I stuck my head into the plexiglass dome on top, and I looked 360 degrees all around. A full moon lit up all the fields. The wind was gently rocking the whole van. It was going over the van, through the van, and under the van. As I look back now in that time in my life, I realize that living in a van was the only way that I could follow my dream. Even though I was living in a van without a real home, on stage in front of an audience, that's when I really felt at home. I'd look at the dome in the moonlight, and I knew these memories I'd have no problem recalling 60 years later. That night I started strumming my ovation, and I found a groove that sounded like driving, that sounded like rolling, motivating, moving forward, being on the road, chugging along. Then I remembered Otis Redding's band talking about living on the road and having nothing to show, but they wouldn't trade it for anything. I got over 100 songs out of that old truck that I called home for 3 years. A great investment in freedom that became part of my life. And one of those songs is about a person that has nothing, nothing of value. But he's put so much value into nothing, he's gonna hold on to it at any cost. This is called Never Let It Go.
This old truck just keep on rolling as the highway flashes by, and my life seemed kind of empty when my well of hope run dry. My health is bad and my woman's sad, 'cause I'm living out on this road. But I have worked so hard for what I got, ain't never gonna let it go. Never gonna let it go. I don't have much to speak of. In fact, I am my own best friend. And whenever I get a bargain, I get the shortest end. I paid my dues so many times, these miles on my face begin to show. But I have worked so hard for what little I got, ain't never gonna let it go. Never gonna let it go. Never. And I don't like to stay in one place too long. If it don't feel right, I'm gone. Heading right into the black of night. Sometimes it just ain't right when I can't even get paid at the end of the night. I played all the bars, I can show you the scars, but I still believe it's so, that I've worked so hard for what I got, I ain't never gonna let it go. I never say never. Things can't get better. Just keep on rolling. Got to get going.
More about Billy Pruitt at billypruitt.com or find him on Facebook. This podcast was produced at rocketchicago.com.